The NAD 3020.
Oh, I remember when Harry Pearson hooked it up to his Infinity reference system, and you know he was boasting in the pages of TASS about how we drove the IRS. Well, can you imagine the readership? They just would have had this collective orgasm and rushed out and bought 3020s.
Hello, welcome to Not an Audiophile, the podcast. This is episode 18, the last episode actually for 2024, and because of that, we're going to wrap up the year in all kinds of ways. Basically, we're going to discuss products that are either overmarketed and underperforming, or in fact do perform, and there's the ones that are overperformers and undermarketed. Best sound of the year, worst sound of the year, thoughts on how to find new artists in Tidal, and much more. Hello, David. We're back at the bench. Is it a bench?
At the Batcave.
At the Batcave, yeah, the electronic Batcave, with much to discuss. And really, it's a kind of a wrap-up of 2020. I nearly said 2025. 2024, looking at how things will be in 2025. I guess the way forward is that cassettes must come back. Build large ceiling height cabinetry behind our YouTube desk and fill it with cassettes.
Look, yeah, and floor mounted transmission line subwoofers.
Yeah. Sorry, wall. Did you say wall mounted?
Floor
mounted.
Yeah. Building cavities under your house.
Okay. I hadn't thought of that, but that's the new thing.
I can see that coming back, especially in apartments. You know.
Okay. Well, 2024 was a it was an exciting year for Not an Audiophile because three of us, four, including yourself, really, and couldn't do it without you, obviously, have got this thing going, and people are listening, so that's a miracle. But anyhow, I just guess there's always room for an alternative viewpoint. In this case, this is one that comes from the point of view of audio industry professionals. So, I reckon that I kind of see the same products reviewed, awarded, mentioned over and over again by a multiplicity of I guess they're called online magazines these days, the oldie worldy press.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But of course, the new age way of reviewing hi-fi, the YouTube video, they only seem to have seven brands or seven products or something. I don't know what that is.
Seven favourite ones. Come on.
Well, I mean, are they favourites? Is that what it is? I mean, I've got here in my notes, if I could scroll to the correct part of the screen, brands such as, well, Kef. I mean, Kef, Monitor Audio. Anything from IAG, mostly Wharfdale. Wim. I don't know. How do you pronounce it?
Well, if you're from Germany, it's Vim.
Well, it would be, yes. Or would it be Vim?
Or am I being whimsical?
So, I don't know what the two M's are for, but there's a love for that. Eversolo I've got here. And Hi-Fi Rose. There's a pattern. The pattern is there is a lot of IAG products in there, which are quite good products generally. There's a lot of I used to call it T and A. Apparently, that's inappropriate.
Oh, really? What is
It's T plus A now.
Oh, T plus A,
yeah,
of course.
Because
yeah.
You know that's an Australianisation of T plus A would be T and A, mate.
Yeah.
But apparently, that's not it. And of course, we all know what it really stands for.
Indeed.
A couple of German guys who started an audio company, presumably. So, what do you got? Do you see similar? Repetitive reviews.
Oh, look, it's kind of always been there. I remember in the days of flat dead trees with ink on it. Certainly things like Stereophile and TASS, and certainly the British press, God bless them, would have their favourites. And every edition,
yeah, I guess so.
Well, yeah, I mean, in every edition, you would kind of see who would be reviewed and you know why. And you know, this came at a point where obviously advertising revenue had an influence on editorial. I mean, we all know there's supposed to be a Chinese wall between editorial and advertising. That's patently untrue, as we all know. Not to say that that's necessarily...
We talk about it a lot.
Well, it's not, I think it's a commercial reality.
Sure, it's a commercial reality. And that's the problem with reviews is that, you know, you simply can't spend days doing a review for free. No one can. Somewhere or another, it's got to be paid for. Are there products that that don't get reviewed, that don't get mentioned? And maybe, you know, like... Maybe their marketing department is disorganised or non-existent. And I mean, it is unfortunately quite an important part of a hi-fi brand is to tell people about the products you have and that you exist. Mm. Some are better at it than others. One presumes that the IAG people are very good at it, I guess.
And very clever because they've tapped into a seam of want that people have.
Yeah.
And, you know I'm being kind of generalist about it, but it is the retro nostalgia scene.
Yeah, they are. Actually, when you think about it, I think we mentioned this previously, but yeah, they have a deep vein, mine, seam thing. Like you've got Leek, which they bought for a dollar at an auction and then reinvented. Well, they presumably did.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he was chuckling, by the way, for those not watching on YouTube. That's right, there is no camera. Which is just a made-up thing of Audio Lab parts. Oh, should we be saying that? I don't know, but I mean, clearly it is. I mean,
let's check with our legal department.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll edit this out.
Indeed.
And it's not a bad product.
Not at all.
Yeah, and the speakers are kind of which I haven't heard properly, only briefly at the show earlier in the year. But it I don't know. I didn't think much of them in that room, but that's irrelevant. They could have been, you know, not run in or whatever. I don't know. The point is that between that and the classic series of Wharfdale and the quad stuff they do, so and it goes on. What do you like that's not mentioned? Because that's what we're here for. We're here to expose, shine a light,
lift up the rock.
Yes, lift up the rug. Pull the pants down on
oh dear.
On something that no one knows about that's really good.
Yeah.
Got anything?
Well, look, there's a couple of contenders and, you know, it's not a binary, i.e., something's been marketed to its death or something's unknown. I think there are gradients in between. Mm. I've got three products that I genuinely think are quite remarkable that really haven't been reviewed to death, or they're not certainly mass market reviews, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, in no particular order, Acoustic Energy have a speaker called the Corinium, which is their flagship speaker. Not inexpensive, but not stupidly priced either.
No,
And
very sharply priced, really.
Well, I think it's extraordinarily good value, considering how it's made, but also, more importantly, how it sounds.
Yeah.
It's one of those rare birds in audio where you can listen to it again and again and still have a grin on your face and go, there's something beguiling about this thing that I cannot articulate.
Yep. In fact, Acoustic Energy, the rejuvenated Acoustic Energy that has been around for the last, I guess, 5-6 years, is a very good range of loudspeakers as far as listenability and just being quite charming and very good value for money. And they did have a light shot on them for a bit.
Yep.
But that, I guess, went away. Maybe they're, maybe they're selling as many as they can make. I don't know. But yes, this is a new high-end model, isn't it? I mean, we say high-end. It's made from better materials. It's a bit more substantial in size. And the way it looks like it's sort of hewn from the solid to some degree. And briefly, I have heard it. And it sounds good, very good, yeah, yeah. So a worthy contender of not really, although it did win an award or two.
Yeah.
It's not like it's completely.
Oh, it's not, that's why I'm kind of like qualifying my responses by the gradient thing, because look, it's not entirely unknown, but in my humble opinion, I don't think it's getting the love it deserves, along with a lot of other stuff, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. I find, if I have my three, I find that the good old famous Japanese brands are the ones that kind of get ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Esoteric Audio, I wasn't even sure they were still going.
Yeah, absolutely.
The stuff is made possibly to the highest standard on the planet. It's if you lift the lid on one, it is just a Japanese engineering tour de force. It is so beautifully put together, so thoughtfully made. Mm. The sound would be personal taste,
yep.
But one thing you can be sure of, it is built exceptionally well, and to some degree the price reflects that. But compared with the likes of Luxman, another Japanese-made brand, but owned by IAG,
although somewhat
secretly, it seems. They don't talk about it much, but it gets a lot more exposure, of course, although their price points are a bit sharper. And then Accuphase, of course, is just so bizarrely oldie-worldy Japanese, where their website looks like it was built before the internet really began. clearly, all developed on Notepad and
just photographed onto the web. Here you go, kids.
But the products, of course, are just delightful and so lovely to listen to. And maybe not everyone's cup of tea, of course, because they are quite sweet sounding. But I do find it odd that those, well, even the three brands, if you could probably include Luxman to some degree, kind of not flavour of the month, not in everyone's budget. But still very little coverage for the two others than Lux. So have you got another one, David?
Yeah, there's an Australian brand, not being sycophantic here, called Delacord. No, I'm dead serious about this.
Oh, yeah? Oh, okay. Well, I'll be quiet then.
The big Delacord system with the active bass unit.
I am very familiar with it, yes.
Yeah, indeed. Mm. You may have heard of it, sir. Mm.
Yeah, I know something about it, yeah.
I've recently had an experience with it over a couple of days, and I did not know what to expect, but I was more than pleasantly surprised with the outcome.
Wow, thank you. I didn't know that this compliment was coming, but I'll take it as I don't know. I mean, I'll admit that it sounded good in your store.
Mm-hmm.
Your store not being your store, but the store that you work at or for. So there, you know, it's not like I sold it to you or loaned it to you.
No,
you
not
just
at all.
Happened to be
not
there. Yeah, I think it sounded pretty good there, and I'm very happy with that system, yeah. Mm. And that was a group effort, of course. That was Brad Serhan had some part in that system as well, in the mid-range and treble area. But, yeah, it is my... what's the word? Well, 12-month project, and it's got a few unique ideas in it. And whether that is part of the magic, I don't know. But you know,
well, this speaks to the very.
It does. You know what it does well?
What's that?
This is going to sound terrible as someone who, I mean, the person who designed the thing, but it does image rather nicely and rather
unquestionably.
Yeah, and not in a you must lock your head into a. Chair, you know, vice head vice arrangement. You know, you can sit somewhere in the general vicinity of the middle of the speaker of the sweet spot, and it just generates a very nice stereo image, which is kind of you know, I think it's a bit to do with incredibly careful stereo matching.
Mm.
There's lots of other things as well. So,
well, again,
dispersion patterns, obviously,
it's
evenness of.
Well, of the three products, two of which I've spoken about so far, it's the one that's got the least exposure with marketing.
Well, actually, that's a whole subject in itself, which has got nothing to do with my brand.
Correct.
Except that just, you know, the value of a brand now has probably never been higher. And I can assure you from first-hand experience that starting a new brand is a silly idea because it is a very long-term project. There is no... quick way. I mean, if you look back, I mean, we interviewed Mike Creek recently.
Mm.
He kind of had instant success.
Those
Ralph
were,
Waters with
those
Richter
were different
kind of
days, had, though.
This
so
is
were
my
massively
point. Yeah,
different
they absolutely
days.
Absolutely were, because if you got a great review in a good magazine,
yep.
You were kind of made.
That
I
was
mean,
enough,
the,
yeah.
The NAD 3020.
Oh, I remember when Harry Pearson hooked it up to his Infinity reference system. And, you know, he was boasting in the pages of TASS about how we drove the IRS. Well, can you imagine the readership? They just would have had this collective orgasm and rushed out and bought 3020s.
Everyone, and the other thing, being a bit like the Creek, being an affordable amplifier in this case, the more mature client would perhaps just buy one for a second room or for an experiment.
Yeah, and why not? Yeah.
And why not? I mean, the creep is £99 for crying out loud.
Well, this is right. When, you know, and listening to the interview, when, you know, when he disclosed the actual purchase price of it, I thought, well, it's a lay down Mazaire. Why would you not buy it for £99? Yes. And similarly with the old NAD 3020, it was cheap as chips.
Yes.
So, like, you have this oracle in the industry, Harry Pearson, saying, oh my God, this is manna from heaven. Mm. And by the way, it's only a couple $100 US or whatever it was.
Yeah.
There was no cognition involved. People just walked out and bought the bloody thing.
Absolutely. And I guess even though I've mentioned Weem, I don't know how to pronounce it, and I probably don't much care, I guess is to some degree a modern day, or Eversolo is a modern day version of that, where it's not particularly expensive. It's very good value for money. Why not give it a try?
Sure.
But like a lot of very tight budget products, I think ultimately for me, there's little satisfaction with either of those things because A, I'm used to something better, which, you know, is, you know, through hard work and being in the business for a long time, I have a better streamer to listen to. But in the case of the Weem, it's so cheap. Why not just spend a bit more and get the blue thing that I bought the other day?
The Blue Sound.
So the Blue Sound Nano, isn't it? It's called the Nano. It's brand spanking new, I think. But I did grab one to try, and this is not a review, but, I mean, it's very pleasing to listen to.
Yeah.
The app works well. I did have some trouble setting it up because I'm a Nong, but I don't know what that was, although I think it needed the new firmware, and that and then eventually the app offered to upload new firmware and everything worked better after that. I think it sounds quite a bit better than than the other products that I may have alluded to. Not sure about the Eversolo. I'm thinking more of the one that starts with
W. Well, there's two paths here, Andrew. I mean, there's the whole notion of what sounds good and, you know, everyone's ear and experience is different. But there's also the companion dialogue about how it feels, how it looks, and all that jazz—the whole user experience thing. And I remember being on a certain website recently, and I won't mention it. Anyway, all these people who have quote unquote done their research—I love forums.
Done their own research.
Forums. Oh, look, don't get me started. Anyway, they were waxing lyrical about some $500-$600 streamer, and why would you buy anything else? And then they had the temerity to start to eviscerate Eversolo about their new A10, which is their high-end contender thing. And it's about $5,000-$6,000 wherever you are on the planet. And in the Banana Republic, Australia, it's what, six something? I don't know.
Forget it's not it. Inexpensive.
It's not inexpensive, but it's hewn from a solid piece of metal.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the look and feel of it is just beyond anything. It's a nod and a wink to the esoteric stuff out of Japan. It's really extraordinarily well made. Yeah. And people in the forum were kind of saying, oh, you know, why would you just buy an A6? And I'm going, no, you're missing the goddamn point here, kids. It's for those people who want that pride of ownership, who want that experience.
Yeah, of course, that's absolutely part of it.
Yeah.
But there is everything in balance. So if you've got a pair of entry-level KEFs with the modern-day version of a NAD 3020 driving them, you're probably not going to hear a lot of difference. But I have to say, on the FR2035s, the active Delacords you referred to, the obvious difference between different streamer preamps that I've plugged into those things, it is just chalk and cheese. Yeah,
of course, no kidding.
You know, it just lays, and they're not particularly revealing loudspeakers, at least the way they sound. They don't sound kind of etched like some.
Are you suggesting they're not like some near-field monitors, perhaps?
Or they're not like some wide, far-field, multi. Oh, well, they are a multi-enclosure thing. But anyhow, you know, the top enclosure is quite rectangular, rectilinear, not egg-shaped. Anyhow, but they do easily show the difference between we've had a NAD streamer preamp on them, we've had an Eversolo on them, we've had a Name on them, we've had a Lumen, I've had the cheapest Weem. And I haven't put the Nano on them yet, but I'm about to. So, but the difference between all of those was, you know, and some might say, well, what was the best? Well, for me, it was absolutely the lumen. It was just really nice, really nice, clean and detailed. Not clean and detailed sounds.
It's not clinical.
No, not at all. None of that. And I am talking the cheaper Eversolo, the one for, I don't know, 2000 or 1600.
Yeah, the A6.
Yeah. Well, how much does it retail for?
Well, the A6 is around $1,300.
Okay, yeah. So it's very inexpensive. So you can forgive it for that. But it does sound like breaking glass compared with the sweetness and the musicality of the Lumen. And sure, it's a huge price difference. But
well, you know, there's a huge price difference between even the Lumens and the top-end Orendas, but the Orendas just sound like manna from heaven. They're astonishing.
Yeah, they are strings. Very, well, all bordering on warm for my taste. Mm-hmm. And sorry, I have played also the Orenda through them. You know, when I think about it, I've had a crack at just about everything with them. And they're quite... they expose what's going on. You definitely have to. I mean, this is not about our product, my product. This is more about the system synergy. How we got off onto this, I don't know. But the thing is, it's a little bit to do with what we're talking about because the Hot 7 products, if that's what there is on the interwebs, is kind of irrelevant. There's 700 other products that may be more for you. So reviews are only worth so much in that regard. Have you got another product that doesn't have a spotlight on? Oh, which you mentioned.
Yeah, and it's a little left of centre. Ferrum out of Poland.
Oh, yeah.
They have a device called the Wandler, which is a high-end DAC. And it's quite extraordinary. It's to my ears anyway. I've got to predicate this by saying
they look
Well, that's their Achilles heel. The problem with Ferrum is that they've gone for a desktop audio look. And I agree. I think the aesthetic is rather lovely. It doesn't call any undue attention to it. It's visually, it's the diametric opposite of say Macintosh. Okay, it's very quiet, understated. Centurion, why do you titter so?
Macintosh is clearly for the giant Ram truck owner, isn't it? Well, I mean, you want to make a pretty obvious statement about the size of things.
Well, that's true, but you know the whole Ferrum ethos is, as I said, they're diametric opposite. So it's small, it's compact, it's very confident, but it's not visually alluring in the sense that, you know, you don't have to, it doesn't get in your way visually when you're watching stuff. And for a lot of people, that's a problem. The Wandler is one of the best acts I've heard at any price.
Okay.
But it's not getting enough love, I don't think.
Is there a particular aspect of its performance that tickles your fancy?
Well, Ferrum are one of the few manufacturers who actually will buy D2A converters, like in this case it's the high-end ESS chip, but they forego the onboard filtering and they actually they architect their own current to voltage converters as well. So they basically grab the ESS chip, run it in balanced, but we'll look after the bum end of it, so to speak.
Okay. Yep.
And it is just sweet, entrancing, I hate the English language. It's extraordinarily listenable. I'm not trying to imply that it's like soft and chewy.
Is there a German word that more accurately?
I don't know, but look, it's one of those. Look, if you were to do this kind of a bipolar thing about audio, there's some audio, and I'm sure the listeners will totally agree with this, regardless of price, that after 5 minutes you want to run from the room screaming.
Oh, yes.
And there's other audio that, like, you sit down and after 2 hours you go, where the fuck did the time go?
Well, yeah.
And it lies in that camp. It's just like, I just want to keep listening.
Yeah, there's that, and you keep learning more about its ways as time goes on.
Indeed.
There's a complexity to the way it delivers music that... yeah, other products, very one-dimensional, just sort of they smash it in your face and it's not very pleasant. We don't need to mention those brands. Everyone knows who they are. In fact, the reality is, and I'm just looking at my notes, if the stereo image has collapsed because I've moved my head away from my stereo microphone, but it's it's personal taste ultimately. Whatever works for you, this is where I sit on these things. I've got a couple of quick brands I'll run over. There are a couple of UK-built brands which I feel kind of slip under the radar. And actually, one of them is Creek, which have, you know, like Mike's the nicest guy, and he doesn't have a huge product range these days, but he has got this little inexpensive amp that, yeah, we know it's all made in China and that, but it's very nicely done. And it is very much the modern version of his original 4040. It's a very affordable amplifier that does a lot of things well, and it makes sweet sounds, they say. I haven't heard it, so I'm not going to... But looking at it, the way it's put together from a technical person's eye, I like it. Because he shows off the insides quite happily. So there's that. Exposure, yeah, it's a pet favourite because it's such simple, good quality engineering. And it's got a very transparent sound. It has no real character, and that's what holds Exposure back, is that it's just literally, I would describe their amplifiers as largely a straight wire with gain. So lack of personality means that some people don't immediately get what they're doing, and you have to listen more. And then, of course, then worldwide they're not, you know, extraordinarily well marketed or distributed. And I don't mean to, that's not a taking a crack at the local distributor who does a great job. I taught him everything he knows. It's just that stores can't stock it because no one's coming in and asking for it. Correct. So it's a two-way street. But Fell Audio is the one I really wanted to bring up. So Fell Audio is a new brand. Now, going back to the new brand problem, have you heard of...
No, I've not.
Well, it's a guy in the UK who owns a few stores who has put a team together to build these two affordable products, much similar size to the thing on the bench behind you. For those who aren't watching on YouTube.
Well, and pray tell, what is the thing on the bench behind me?
It's a B200 musical fidelity, which is in the same case as an A1, the original A1. So it's a tiny little slimline thing.
Yep.
And it's very similar to a Creek 4040, the original one, size-wise. The point is, this new Fell thing is a bit bigger than that, but super simple, made in the UK. Price points are about £500 a piece for a CD or an integrated amp. The amp is, it's got a bit of Class D power out stage in it, but it's, you know, it's a traditional transistor, probably op amp front end. It's got a phono stage in it. It's just super simple. Good old integrated amp, sort of analog, I guess, except, well, it's analog. Class D's not digital as such, but, you know, hey, it's supposed to... I haven't heard it. I'm just mentioning it because I just find it bizarre that someone goes to the trouble
of developing
these very sharply priced, made in the UK, which is a, you know, pretty... It's a tough thing to do, to sell it for £500. No one mentions it anywhere.
Well, isn't that indicative of how much noise there is out there on the interwebs?
Yeah, and that's the thing. You're talking about the good old days. It was easier to get a product going, and now there's more products and there's more noise.
Oh, by a factor of hundreds.
Marketing channels, if you
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And everyone's got the, you know, this goes to the fact of, you know, everyone having their favourite YouTuber, favourite influencer, how I dislike that term. And now anyone with a green screen, a couple of Panasonic cameras and a mic can purport to be an influencer. It's fabulous, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, they are an influencer. The thing is, but...
Hence that, my despair.
But that influencer term's right up there with the term audiophile, in correct. My opinion. Correct. I mean, it's got a certain... There's a certain something that is associated with the term that's, you know... I mean, I think audio reviewer, and if you think of the ones that have been around that have done it for 30 years and typed words, I think there's a care and a thought to the process that is not there with a 10-minute piece to camera. I'm still not sure what that's about, by the way. You're still looking at... And the reason why we do a radio-style podcast is because, well, you don't want to look at my head for 10 minutes. I can assure you. It's
nor mine.
It's just not what you want to do.
We want to attract listeners, not repel them.
Yes. And the other thing is, the product quite often hardly gets a showing. There's usually a pop-up on the screen, a couple of product shots that the manufacturer has given them, and it's mostly a talking head. Okay. Now, there's good talking heads, and I'll mention Darko in this because he's a pro and he's a pleasure to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a pleasure to look at necessarily, but he's not... He's not horrible to look at. He's not like me, but you know, he has a very persuasive way of massaging information into you, and that's good. And there are others, and then there are others that are like, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there was the cheap audio man. I watched something he did yesterday. I mean, that's like he's. He was saying some things that I completely disagree with, like the room doesn't matter and room treatment's pointless. And
oh, really?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, which it is. Well, if you're a cheap audio guy, you don't have any money for room treatment. So
I must go and tell all my friends in the pro audio field that their control rooms are poorly displayed and irrelevant.
You should just fill them up with curtains and sofas.
Indeed.
Which gets me onto another of my favourite subjects, which we won't go down, which is just how there's just too much absorption in people's rooms. Now, did you have another product, or have we done that one?
No, I've listed my three that I think need more love.
Yeah, well, and look, I concur with all of those. We'll put them on the website when we put this up so people can have a quick look and remind themselves what they were. And then there'll be links through to the products. I should mention that we don't get paid for this, of course,
no,
in any way. So just for clarity, this is just our personal preference. I'll finish that just by saying there's not just Delacour. There's a bunch of Australian brands that that are probably not well known internationally, and maybe that's their fault. I mean, but it is hard to get the word out. I mean,
but it costs money and time.
It costs money and time. Yeah. That's right. So it costs time, so therefore it costs money. So Alan March at March Audio is a great guy, super smart. We did interview him earlier in the year, and we made a mistake with that interview because we spoke far too much about his history at Rolls-Royce and not enough about audio, but we will have him on the show again. Pitt and Giblin, a couple of young guys in Tasmania who make very thoughtful and quite original, mostly horn-loaded loudspeakers.
Yeah, they're interesting speakers.
Yeah, they're all active, and they sound really great, as do Alan's amplifiers. Sirhan and Swift, of course, you know, very much in the house with Brad Sirhan being the Sirhan part, and Morris Swift we've also interviewed. So, yes, it's a little bit of a... there's a circle of Australia. Well, here's another one, OAD Ultra Fidelity. John DeCenzi, yeah. But what a product. I mean, if any of these products I've just mentioned deserved a bit more fame, it would be John's. This thing is designed totally from the ground up. Now, Alan's a great guy and a smart cookie, but, you know, yeah, he skips a step with the power amp stage, obviously. So, but John, not at all. And every single part of that amplifier is preamp power his design work, and they're made locally to exceptional Swiss standard.
It's kind of like the Australian Nagra. I'll never forget this when I first met John and I saw the power amp at a Sydney Hi-Fi show a few years back.
Yep.
I walked in, and you know how sometimes you do a double take. The amplifier was in my left peripheral vision, and I thought, oh, how lovely, someone's bought an old Yamaha B2 power amp.
Indeed, yes.
And then I looked at it and I gasped because the casework was just astonishing.
It is
it's
astonishing.
Up there with like Boulder's casework.
Absolutely.
It's really exquisitely done.
Yeah. And in the podcast, he explained how that happened, because the people that do his machining are the people who make not the machining but the tooling to make the machine for Apple phones and other tooling they make for other super premium products around the world. And that all happens in Melbourne, and not Melbourne, Florida, but Melbourne, Australia. And then Duntech. So Kiet Lowe, we haven't had him on the show. Brad has mentioned him because he was involved with Brad back in the good old Orpheus days. And Kiet has put an enormous amount of effort into that. And I have heard the loudspeakers on a couple of different occasions. They're very impressive. I know people are buying them, but it's just not, you know, it's not mentioned. And, you know, and look, maybe he's not a super great marketer, but I tell you what, he's made a fantastic product, so, you know, deserves to be mentioned. And that's that. The only other thing I'd say, just to finish it off, there's a couple of other speakers that are actually from around the world, which I find surprising, get really so little love. Totem Acoustics, which I believe from memory is Canadian. I've heard their speakers at Munich on many occasions and have often thought they're the best affordable loudspeaker at the show. Neat Loudspeakers, UK product, which I have sold in the past, and I sold it because it's just so natural and easy to listen to. And Morel, I find hilariously undermarketed as well. Also a just a first-class quality product.
Mm.
So that's the end of that round of discussion, and we'll have a quick break. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It's really appreciated. We hope you're enjoying the podcast. We've certainly enjoyed making it. And I say we've got obviously Brad Serhan has assisted me with many podcasts and finding great guests. Sharon has also assisted in a way that can't be replaced with all of the work of getting an episode on the internet, producing it, and, of course, running the business. And David Carrazza, his input is invaluable as far as just interesting conversation and bringing up things that otherwise the other three of us would never think of. So once again, thanks for listening in 2024. We look forward to 2025. We've got a great audience, an ever-expanding audience, and that's really a pleasure. And in season two, we're going to polish the machine a little bit and try to make it even more interesting. So listen along, and of course, if you could follow, subscribe, or maybe even write a review if you feel strongly about something, it would be very much appreciated. So thanks again, everybody, for listening in 2024, and see you in 2025. Hey, we're wrapping up 2024. I think it was a pretty good year.
I agree.
I mean, we all had a few changes. It's been a busy year. Have you heard anything particularly amazing this year under any circumstances? At a customer's home, at a store, at a factory, at a show? I'll go first if you're...
Yeah, I'll gather my thoughts.
Gather your thoughts, because I've thrown that at you.
Because gentle listeners, this is totally unscripted.
Oh yeah, I think they know. I do have notes, but only to, I mean, I know what I heard this year that impressed me, and so I was lucky enough to go to Munich High End again, which we now find out was for the second last time, with the last show in Munich coming up next year. And then it's moving to Vienna, which is fine. A cappella horns, and they're not a horn loudspeaker in the tradition that you would expect. They are more of a giant Duntech sovereign sized tower with a rather odd looking, I'll call it, giant waveguide on the front of it, and I don't really know anything more about it. You should look it up. There'll be a link on the website to them. But their room at Munich, it sort of is kind of part of our previous segment and conversation where it's a product that no one talks about. They were positioned away from the main show, at the end of a hall down where PMC were doing their Atmos demo in a large, I'll call it a sort of a ballroom affair, is what it probably is. We went down there to try to, having not booked for the Atmos demo, tried to scunge our way in, sneak in, sort of like, oh, yes, we've got tickets. Look and hold a sort of, I don't know, a credit card or something and wave it. That wasn't going to work. There were simply no places. So I did get in the next day. That's another story. And I use that as a learning exercise to how to play the system, because it was all fully booked out. So there were, but the thing with those things is that sometimes people don't turn up. So you can sneak in if you have to wait around. But getting back to a cappella. So we walked away somewhat disappointed, a friend I was with and myself, that we couldn't sneak in, because he was particularly interested in hearing Atmos at that level with, I don't know how many speakers, but, you know, a lot. There was a room nearby. There was a sign that said a cappella. You know, I think they are German. My friend was German, but he hadn't really heard of them. And so we went in. And there was very few people in there. It was quite a big space. This room was set up with the speakers firing across the shorter dimension, which was kind of nice. They threw an extraordinarily large stage of beautiful music. And we sat down and were just astounded at just the exciting presentation. And I don't mean exciting in some kind of overly dynamic, crisp, detailed, etched kind of way. We're not talking about the last word in you know, hearing things that you'd never heard before or anything like that. This is just entertainingly and maybe not even putting musicians in the room, but kind of like that, because it was just so easy to listen to, so lifelike, so utterly mesmerizing that we sat there for like four, and the guy, we sat there for four tracks. The guy who's probably the owner of the company or the designer, or was an interesting looking character, he never spoke. He sat down in the back corner of the room. Towards the end of the track, he was playing records on this outrageous turntable with about a 3 foot long tone arm made from, you know, balsa or something.
You don't exaggerate, do you?
I mean, no, it was. I've got photos and I will show them to you, and they will be on the website.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know what the turntable was. I mean, you know, other people will know. I don't really care what it was. It just the sound that, and it was like a giant integrated amp. So it was a, I don't know, that's all it was. It was a turntable, a giant integrated amp, and these giant speakers that just, and they're not inexpensive. So don't get excited, folks. You can't buy them for $10,000 a pair. They were all the money in the world. But the sound, just, you could sit there for weeks. Now, you were talking about it earlier where, you know, you, that is the difference. You either want to get out of the room, or in this case, you just luxuriate there. And I came back the next day to have another listen with a different friend/industry cohort. I can't even think who the hell it was, but I'm like, come and have a listen to these things. And he was also equally as amazed. And we also again sat there for four tracks, not really wanting to leave, except that the second day people were hearing about it. The room was full. In fact, it was as full as people who've been to Munich will know. The MBL room is always chock-a-block with people because it sounds amazing as well, and that's the other suggestion I would make. But a cappella, if you're going to Munich next year, and I presume they'll be there, you absolutely have to have a listen to it because it is genuinely amazing, unlike 90%, I'm sorry to say, at least 90% of what you hear at that show. And people say, oh, yeah, you can't get good sound to show. Well, that's bollocks because these people had the most amazing sound, as do MBL, and as did ultimately the PMC room sounded pretty bloody good as well. Yeah. So I don't think there's a problem with getting good sound at a show. I think, sure, it's ruined by, you know, annoyingly high ambient noise levels. If you can avoid that, then obviously the system sounds better straight away. But yeah, absolutely, easily the vote for this year for the best sound I heard all year. And also, of course, maybe what makes it seem a little better was that I just didn't expect it. It was, you know, I was a bit disappointed perhaps that I missed out on PMC on the first day and then happened across this amazing sound. And I kind of went back the next day to confirm that I didn't dream at all and that, in fact, it was just, you know, it was a bit like, you know, one of those, you know, what's an Italian champagne? Prosecco. You know, in some beautiful Italian setting, and you look at the bottle and you go, oh, this is the most amazing drink I've ever had, and it's, you know, €5. And then you buy it at home and you're like, this tastes like cheap plonk, because it's all, you know, place and time. And
it's all contextual.
Yes. And so I went back to confirm that that was not the case. And it was equally as amazing the second day, as was MBL, which is my regular suggestion as just the best sound on the planet. But, you know, not everyone agrees with that, but most do. It's kind of irrelevant. Their full-blown system these days is about €1.5 million, and I think the a cappellas, the system was over €1 million. So this is kind of academic. Probably the incorrect usage of the word, but it's, yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter, but it is it balances all of the disappointment that you hear sometimes in those situations where you go into your, might have been your favourite brand's room, and you leave a little disappointed.
Yeah. Well, as we spoke a few episodes ago, all of this stuff is frame of reference stuff, and you don't know what you don't know until you don't know.
No, and I think people who... Yeah, well, I've said this, and I've probably said it in this podcast any number of times, and I've certainly said it to many people over the years who are audiophiles, and I say that in the nicest possible way. They are genuine enthusiasts of audio equipment and great music.
Sure.
Reproduced beautifully, but they've never been to Munich. And I don't mean the town specifically. I mean the show, the high end show. And you would say, oh well, I'm not, it's this and it's that, and it's on the other side of the planet. Oh yeah, it's a pain to get to. There's no doubt about it. But it's a $2,000 airfare, and if you just went there for the show, you could probably do it for $1,000 for a couple of days. So it's a $3,000 investment. Just eat sandwiches and drink water, and expand your horizons infinitely over. You know, the otherwise very good Melbourne Hi-Fi show, which really is just a handful of, great products, but this is everything. There's really not much that isn't there that Correct. You can't Yep. hear and then come away with a far more accurate idea of what you really like. What have you got, David? Do you have something that tweaked your interest this year?
I'm just pulling this out of the sack randomly, but two surprises. We deployed a system for a client, consisted of a Lab 12 tube amp integrated.
Yep.
Really unpresupposing, looks very, very interesting, very yes. retro. People yes. will either love the look of it or hate the look of it.
Yeah, yeah.
With a pair of Martens.
Yeah, okay, yep.
From Sweden.
Which is, I would say, almost a... an interesting combination in a way.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people, well, I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't have heard that combo, but I was genuinely surprised.
Mm.
Genuinely surprised how, here we go with the English language, how musical and yes. fun it was. It was yeah. a fun sounding yeah. system. It That's, was one of those yeah. Systems.
Fun's good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, if it's not about the music, what the hell are we doing? Mm. Seriously. And we were playing so many different genres and so many different artists through it. And there was stuff there that I normally don't like listening to that I'm thinking, you know what? That sounds bloody excellent. And this is a really interesting system. And it wasn't MBL price or anything like
no,
that.
No. Which Martens? Small yeah. ones, big ones?
What? The medium Martens.
Yeah, okay. So a floor standard. A floor standard. Yeah, okay. Well, medium-sized floor standard.
Yeah. Not so, small. But it was a beautiful sound, yep. really beautiful sound, and at not insane pricing either. So that was one surprise.
Yeah.
The other thing that really knocked my socks off. This is at the beginning of the year, and this is a very personal thing. I heard the Stax 9000 electrostatic ear speakers.
Okay.
With the Stax top end. Energizer.
Right.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
I'm not a headphone guy, so...
Not many people are.
But I do love Stax, but I haven't heard those ones. So what can you describe about the... using the chunky, clunky English language, what did it for you? About that presentation.
This is going to sound like such a wank, but it's as if the actual hardware disappeared.
Okay.
And I don't say that lightly because I've owned various iterations of Stax Energizers, third-party Energizers, and I'm very familiar with the sound of things, of all the different Stax headphones over the years. But the 9000s were this tour de force that, ironically, we're not a tour de force, if you know what I'm trying to get at. You put them on.
There's a delicacy there, you're saying.
There was just this, like, I'm actually not listening to hardware. The signal's just coming through and the hardware's just getting out of the way.
Yeah. So as if you're at a concert in the sense.
Well, in the sense, there's all these cliched attributes about electrostats, whether they be ear speakers or, you know, in-room speakers. Like, I'm looking at a pair of Martin Logans now.
Yeah, let's finish them one day.
We'll get to that.
They just need to be screwed back together properly because a previous repairer destroyed them. And my enthusiasm level for fixing his bodginess is at an all-time low. But in fact, they are penciled in to be gone by the new year, so they'll be done in the next week. Because they work and they sound lovely. I'm with you on that. And in fact, you know, that's another kind of product, if we think of speakers, electrostatic speakers, that's kind of not spoken about much anymore. And Martin Logan, when I was, sold them briefly back in the day, and they were a big thing in the, I suppose, late 80s, 90s,
correct,
maybe
yeah,
into the 2000s. But, wow, I mean, they even themselves, they kind of gave up.
Well, as did Acoustat and a number of manufacturers. Yes, they just went the way of the dodo.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a kind of a shame because they do have a way about them, but then they have all these other problems, you know, as we can see from the scale of the things. So, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't listen to enough really good headphones. And the thing is, I don't like listening to headphones. I don't like headphones.
I understand that.
Yeah, I don't like being shut off from the world.
Yep.
Except when I'm on an aeroplane. And then I don't, then, you know, then I do.
Well, that's why God invented Apple earbuds.
Yes. Yeah, I've never put one in my ear. I don't know what it's like. I'm just such a heathen.
That's okay.
Yeah, but I do have noise-cancelling headphones of various kinds. We've got time to mention this.
And I've got something to mention too after this.
Okay. Well, I'm going to mention, and this is sort of chucked in at random, I think, because looking at my notes here, we've kind of covered it, but what we haven't covered, and I haven't mentioned this to you preemptively either, is I played a game yesterday on my streamer. I call it the Tidal Alternative Artist Game.
Ooh.
Mm. So you type in, say, I don't know, Eagles, which, you know, you don't want to listen to, right? But, you know, certainly in the 70s and 80s, everyone was, right? So you type in Eagles or the Eagles, and then the way the game works is you, if you need to, click on the artist button, but the point is it comes, you know, it gives you that. Probably if you type in the Eagles, it will come up with Eagles or the Eagles, but you go to the next artist and you listen to their stuff. Now, this is obviously a discover new music kind of game, but we all get stuck in it. Well, I get stuck in a rut to some degree. I mean, I do and I don't. I mean, Tidal's great for discovering new music, but, you know, maybe you want to listen to something you're familiar with, which is this whole thing is going to bring us back to it. Do you have a demo or do you have one track that exposes flaws in equipment that you kind of use regularly is where this is going. But getting back to the new music game, so you select the next artist on the artist list that's not a match for whatever you type in, and you have a listen to it. Now, interestingly, on Tidal, I did this about 10 times, and 8 times out of 10 it was something hip-hop. So I don't know what that's about. And one of them was really quite good. Maybe 2 of them are really quite good. But I typed in, and I think at the request of the woman that I was living with yesterday, and still do today, hopefully, was Barbara Streisand. Streisand?
Oh, this is a great segue to my next point, but go ahead.
Okay. Under Barbara Streisand is Barbara, spelt the same way, Leica. Leica, Leica, not sure how you pronounce L-I-C-A. Wow, there's a find. Her music is of a particular style, slightly jaunty and French sounding.
Jaunty and French.
and it's not the reason I like it. It's great music. She's got a lovely voice. She's got a voice that some people won't enjoy.
Why do you think that is?
Because it's a little bit childlike in some phrasing and that. It's a bit hard. Have a listen. Barbara, spelled, I guess, B-A-R-B-R-A, Leica.
Yeah, okay, I'll give it a listen.
LICA. And here's the bonus for the audiophile listener. Beautiful recording quality. I listened to three or four different albums with three or four different tracks on each album. They're all beautifully engineered, like, you know, demo track, you know, like show off your system quality. But forget that.
Yeah, it was good music.
The music's good. Yeah, exactly.
Nice combo.
Oh, yeah, yeah, a rare combo because indeed. So often, you know, hi-fi shows and demo material.
Please, I've just had breakfast.
And we're all guilty. But
we are.
But some people more guilty than others. No, there's people still playing. I'm not even going to say the word.
No, don't. We'll be murdered.
The guitarist's first name starts with N, his second name with L, and people still play that rot. I mean, that is the worst piece of music in history anyhow. I mean, it's just mournful shit. But, I mean, seriously, and... I mean, I played it once in a shop. I'll admit, I did it, but I've never played it at a show. My good.
Yeah, we should do one episode of tracks and albums. Oh, it should be
well,
banned.
Everyone knows. And John Darko does a lovely job of that as well. But what do you got there, Dave?
Okay, interesting. And again, I say, listeners, this is totally unscripted, but you uttered the words Barbara Streisand. I would like to perhaps close the episode with what I consider the most tragic Schadenfreude-like episode of audio tomfoolery with exactly what is known as the Barbara Streisand effect. You're aware of the Barbara Streisand effect?
I was vaguely aware of it. I believe I know where you're going with which video on the famous YouTube that you are referring or about to refer to, and I do kind of enjoy this story because as a technical person it's I see many examples of this, but
okay, let me
but
explain,
you tell the story.
Let me explain to the listeners who may not be au fait with the Barbra Streisand effect. Many years ago, Barbra Streisand bought this magnificently expensive luxury property on the seaside. I think it was in Florida. I can't recall. It might have been in California. And anyway,
I think it might have been Malibu, but it doesn't matter.
It might have been Malibu. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Anyway, of course, some wags got a hold of the image and put it up on the interwebs. Mm. And she was jumping up and down, fist clenched, and you know, calling out her lawyers and saying, you know, I want this removed. I want this removed. You know, understandably, because she didn't want everyone to know where she lived.
Yeah, the house is outrageously large.
Oh, it's immense. It's stupid. It's you know, kind of Mac Mansion.
Trumpian.
Anyway,
in style and scale. Yeah.
So anyway, so all this brouhaha erupted over the interwebs, and of course, Reddit went mad, 4chan went mad, all the regular surface bloody websites went mad, and of course, what happened, the very opposite effect to the intended result occurred. Instead of dissuading people from looking at this image, millions upon millions
went and had a look
and now know exactly where Babs lived. Mm. And so it was exactly the opposite effect of what she intended.
Yes.
So anything that kind of backfires now is referred to as a Barbra Streisand effect.
Mm.
Now, a really salient example of that happened earlier in December when this lovely YouTuber called Mendit Mark did. And Mendit Mark's got dozens of YouTube episodes up how he gets old audio gear and fixes it.
Mm.
And he's a jolly English guy, really beautiful demeanour, and he's incredibly technical
and
competent.
Great all-round skills, yes.
So anyway, this
one of them being making an entertaining video.
Oh, yeah, yes, I mean, which is a rare art because most YouTubers are dry as all get out. But anyway, he got this, what was it called? Master Groove by Tom Evans Audio. It was a phono preamp.
Yeah.
Mind you, a snippet, £25,000.
Mm.
Let me repeat that. £25,000.
Yeah, it's a big hunk of a thing.
Made of acrylic.
Well, yeah. And now this is funny because I came across the video before the hoo-ha.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know how I did because I'd never seen any of his videos before, so I guess it was already getting served up in the algorithm because I guess I might have looked at something similar. But is the £25,000 today's money or what the guy paid for it?
No, it's today's money. It's on Tom.
Oh, so it's still a current model.
It's still a current model and quote-unquote only 10 are made a year.
Oh, that's right, yes. It's a...
So it's a current model.
Yep.
cut a long story short, there was something failed within it. The owner sent it back to Tom Evans Audio. He uttered some outrageous response for the quote, and the customer said, "No, this is not good enough. I'm taking it to Mendip Mark." Mendip Mark opened it up and showed the horror within. And I won't keep going on about this, but those of you can Google it and find it on YouTube. Amazing, amazing interior. There's very few times my jaw, you know, kind of like involuntarily collapses and I sigh.
Oh, it's a child science project. It's terrible.
You're being extraordinarily generous. Fisher Price came to mind when I looked at it. But anyway, the funny thing, if anything funny can be taken away from this, apart from, you know, Tom Evans' destruction as an audio brand, I think. I mean, Jesus, I don't know what's going to go on there. But there's this other YouTuber I follow called Lewis Rossman, who has he's been a champion of right to repair for Apple gear and all this jazz. Lewis has been around for years and years and years. He came across this, and he did this massive evisceration of what went down, and as only Lewis Rossman can do, because he's an ex-New Yorker. And I urge the listeners to watch the Lewis Rossman reaction to the Tom Evans audio debacle, because there's no other word for it. And that is probably the saddest thing in the audiophile world I've heard.
Saddest thing for 2020? It is, and it is. And fortunately or unfortunately, it I would say not so much now, but in the day there were a lot of those products where they were window dressing on the outside, kooky bullshit on the inside, poorly assembled at that, verging on hardly working most of the time. And for some reason, you know, a couple of great reviews or something and someone important, you know, struck the product on the right day and they wrote something amazing. And here we go. There's a reputation built based on nothing, based on, you know, well, in this case, shockingly poor engineering standards as far as the way it's constructed, and as Mark shows, it's all, you know, straight out of data sheets design. There's nothing in there that's anything inventive whatsoever. It's literally, I think, you know, a 5532 op amp circuit straight out of the data book, repeated over and over. I mean, you know, and look, there's a couple of American brands that I could and won't because it's, you know, because I don't want to deal with the legal ramifications if they're, because I mean, Americans apparently like to sue each other.
You think?
Yeah, there's one particular American brand, and I'm not even going to allude to what it is, but I can assure you it is a total pain in the ass to repair because it is bullshit is what it is. Is that it's just repetitive circuitry, lots of things paralleled up for bizarre reasons. It is literally just, I mean, ultimately now you can get a robot to build you a surface mount circuit board in no time anyhow, at no cost. I mean, so the real cost of these over-engineered rubbishy circuits is nothing, but it looks impressive if you take the lid off.
Of course it does.
And you put a few pretty colour orange electrodes in there or something like that as well, you know, something that looks pretty, bright blue, whatever. And then, you know, and people go, oh, well, that looks kind of expensive.
Don't forget,
there's a lot in there.
Black
for
circuit boards as well.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. Well, the black circuit board thing now is, well, I can talk about that as well. But look, there's a few problems. Oh, is there a problem? I mean, does anyone care where something's made? I think most people.
No, I think people care how they're made.
Yeah, but then they don't really know because, see, the Chinese, and I make a generalisation here, are very good at making things look rather smart. But when you have a closer look, what is the quality of the parts? But no consumer is having a closer look. It's only idiots like me that have to try to fix the stuff that have a closer look, have to have a closer look. I mean, I can assure you that 9 out of 10 things that come out of China are utter rubbish. The other 10% are really well made because whoever organised the manufacture of it paid the extra to do it properly. And not so much extra. I mean, it shouldn't be extra. Just paid the right amount to get it done properly.
Correct.
But, yeah, this Tom Evans thing, I mean, that's just, I mean, that's oldie-worldy, cobbled-together bullshit is what that is.
Well-intentioned men in sheds.
Yeah, it is that. And there is a lot less of that now, but I can assure you in the 90s I had to work on a lot of it. Yeah, it was, you know, you'd get some Yeah, quite often it's phono stages for some reason. But anyhow, yeah, that's a great. The original video, which is now back up, because the point is it was
taken down
on a bogus copyright claim, but which is actually quite nasty, because what I didn't realise, even though I do have a YouTube channel, is that you only get 3 copyright strikes from YouTube, and then your channel's gone.
Correct.
So Mark's had 1.
Yeah.
It's bogus.
Yeah, and he can't reverse that.
No, you can't reverse it. You get 3 and you're gone. And he has a very, obviously a lot of subscribers and, look, the guy's super skilled and has a very nice way of presenting the story, which I just can't do, and hence I don't do it. So what do we got? That was it, 2024.
I think that's it. Interesting year.
What's looking good in 2025? You got 30 seconds. Nothing. Okay, right.
No, not really. I think it's going to be more of the same. I think what will happen eventually, the blob will start eating up a lot of smaller companies. I just look at what's been happening over the last few years with corporate aggregation. I think that's going to continue.
It continued the other day. Someone bought somebody. Onkyo and Klipsch and whatever got taken over by another boardroom full of accountants.
My lips are sealed. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. Another episode.
Yes. Thank you again, David. Thank you for everything this year. Much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Will you be back in 2025? Indeed. I will be back.
I certainly plan to be back.
I mean, we've got thousands of listeners, so we have to come back.
And
so,
an inexhaustible amount of topics.
An inexhaustible amount, yes. Well, let's think on that and come up with an inexhaustible amount.
Yeah, indeed.
All right. Hey, thank you again, David. David Carrazza, Andrew Hutchison, signing off for 2024. We'll be back in 2025.